Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. I've got the low, sexy voice going. I feel like Barry White. I feel a little under the weather, but I couldn't call out sick because I got too big a day and two big interviews that we want to bring you this week. Andrew Yang and Tulsi Gabbard. Big week for California politics. We've got the California Democratic Convention in Long Beach. So we got a lot of politicians here this week. Talk about Tulsi Gabbard in a moment and her fight with Hillary Clinton. A lot of fighting words. But we begin with Andrew Yang, who has seen a real rise in the polls. A lot of folks talking about him. Very interesting candidate. This is one of my favorite interviews we've done on this show. Went out to Beverly Hills to talk to him after like 15 hours of debate prep. So here is Andrew Yang.
Andrew Yang, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Oh, fantastic to be back. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, good to see you. Unfortunately this week, another school shooting.
Oh, it's awful.
We have seen so many Democrats try to do gun control. Even when President Obama had a super majority, he couldn't get it done. How are you going to be able to get done when so many other Democrats haven't been able to get done? Why is it different with you?
Well, I do think that the American people are ready for us to take action on something that should have happened years ago. The consensus is building, and the NRA is at its weakest point in decades. So I believe we can get big things done in terms of common sense gun safety laws that most Americans agree should have happened years back.
So what do you do when the NRA says, no, we're not going to do it? Do you get rid of the filibuster?
I would be open to that if that's what it would take to help make the American people safer. I've got a four-year-old whose school just had an active shooter drill, and so this is personal. But if you look up, one of the big problems that our government has been overrun by NRA lobbyists and lobbyists for the drug companies, the oil companies. So one of my flagship proposals is to give every American voter 100 democracy dollars that we could use then to flush out all the lobbyist cash and take back our government for us.
Another big story this week, of course, impeachment. What have you learned this week?
No, it's really unfortunate, Alex, but some of your darker suspicions now are coming out to light. But at this point, we know who Donald Trump is. And so I confess to being disappointed but not surprised.
You've said you believe impeachment is a political loser?
Well, we have to face facts that not a single Republican crossed party lines to vote for impeachment proceedings, and we would need a couple dozen or so Republicans in the Senate in order to impeach Donald Trump and have him out of office. So it's likely not going to happen. My expectation is that he'll be at the ballot box for me to defeat in 2020.
And do you think he'll be strengthened, though, if he is acquitted in the Senate and then you have to run against him?
Well, this is the tough part. So number one, we have to make a case to America for a positive vision that people will get excited about. And when we're talking about Donald Trump, even in the context of impeachment, we are losing. Number two, if he is acquitted, then he's going to run around claiming vindication and innocence. And so his base is going to be galvanized around that.
Let's talk for a moment about your signature proposal, which is universal basic income, that $1,000 a month, the freedom dividend.
Yes,
right?
Freedom dividend.
Okay, so the biggest question everybody has is, how do we pay for that?
Well, when you look up, who are the big winners in the 21st century economy? It's Amazon, Facebook, Google, mega tech companies that are paying either zero or near zero in taxes. And I know this is hard for people to believe, but Amazon, trillion-dollar tech company, paid zero in federal taxes in 2018. So if we give the American people our fair share, a tiny sliver of every Amazon sale, every Google search, every Facebook ad, every robot truck mile, we can generate hundreds of billions in new revenue very quickly and pay for a $1,000 dividend for every American.
Is there a concern that that's going to increase the cost of everything? I mean, one of the reasons people like Amazon is that it's so low cost.
Well, the great thing is if you put $12,000 a year into our hands, it's going to make a lot of Americans be able to afford things that right now are out of reach because we're living paycheck to paycheck. My plan would increase the buying power for the bottom 94% of Americans.
I know you believe that universal basic income is in part an answer to the homelessness challenge that we have here in California, our biggest issue.
Yeah.
How does that actually work, though? I mean, does giving $1,000 to somebody on Skid Row who's got mental problems, who's got a history of potential criminal violations, how does that help them?
I've talked to people who are trying to help get homeless people off the street. And what they tell me is that the first thing they do is see whether or not this individual is entitled to any benefits or programmatic revenue, like whether they're a veteran and have some pension coming in, whether they have welfare benefits, because they then use those funds to help get that person to shelter and into a better situation. After we pass the freedom dividend, every agency will know that every person on the street has $1,000 a month coming to them. We can use those resources to get them to shelter, to help get them treatment, to help them address substance abuse issues and so on.
Another issue I think is interesting is cryptocurrency. You're a finance guy. Where do you see the future of money? And is cryptocurrency a good thing?
Well, it's a lot like a lot of other tech cycles, Alex, where the underlying technology of the blockchain has vast potential. And in some cases, the cryptocurrency enthusiasm has gotten a little bit ahead of the underlying technology. But as with most other new developments, the technology will catch up over time, and this has the potential to transform financial services, voting, accounting, supply chains. The potential of the blockchain is vast.
So you're open to this?
Well, you don't have a choice but to be open to technology that could make our lives better and easier, in my opinion.
That
there are some legitimate concerns around some of the cryptocurrency applications, but the blockchain is itself, to me, here to stay.
Let's talk for a moment about foreign policy, because you're also running to be the commander-in-chief. And you're running against somebody who has been the vice president, sat in the Situation Room, been the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, traveled the world and met with world leaders. You haven't done any of that. How are you more qualified to be commander-in-chief than Joe Biden?
Well, Alex, if you look around, what are the biggest threats of the 21st century? It's not state actors, which was the case in the 20th century. It's climate change. It's AI. It's loose nuclear materials and drones. It's non-state actors. So we have to have a commander-in-chief who's actually focused on where the puck is going, not where the puck has been. I'm particularly concerned about the fact that China may be set to leapfrog us in AI, which is going to be one of the key technologies of this era, both commercially and in the military realm.
But I mean, you're still dealing with ISIS. You're still having a crisis in Syria. I mean, there are a lot of traditional actors that are potential crises, right?
Well, if you look around, a lot of these were precipitated by migrant crises in these countries that were set off by climate change. So we're in the midst of, unfortunately, a really tough time, and the goal has to be to try and rebuild the alliances and partnerships that have helped keep the world order that this country established together.
Let's talk for a moment about your campaign. I've said that your events are the most fun.
Well, thank you.
Right? And so even when I came out and introduced your last rally, like there was Return of the Mac, and we came out and had a good time with that. Sometimes you cuss. Sometimes you skateboard. Sometimes you play basketball. You've done a whole lots of it. You crowd surf sometimes.
Yes.
What's sort of been the wildest moment with the Yang Gang where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened?
Well, the wildest moment was when I met the gentleman who tattooed my face on his calf. Because I saw the image online at first, and immediately you think, is that real?
Right.
And then you meet the person, he's a military veteran. I met him in Iowa, and oh yeah, it's real. So then I like had to get a close look and like take a picture of my face next to his tattoo of my face.
Yeah.
So that was probably the wildest experience thus far.
That is a real investment in your campaign.
I'd better win, is what I said. I said to him, too. I said, now I really have to win, because if you have a tattoo of my face on your calf, I got to make that the next president.
Yeah, he's more invested than anybody. We like to do something called personal issues, which is where we put like 30 seconds up on the clock and
all right.
Rapid-fire questions, all right?
I like it.
What is your favorite sport to play?
You know this. It's basketball, for
That's
sure.
Right. Favorite actor or actress?
You know, I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like Brad Pitt, man, that guy just never gets old.
Great shape, right? Last thing that you binge watched?
The last season of Stranger Things I watched pretty quickly.
Best rapper of all time?
Jay-Z.
Favorite athlete of all time?
LeBron James is the first one that came to mind, even though I think Michael Jordan's still the GOAT.
Yeah, good call for a California audience. Favorite Thanksgiving meal?
Is there any other choice but a giant turkey with all the trimmings and then the potato and the gravy and the cranberry sauce and all that
Favorite
stuff?
Favorite presidential candidate other than you?
You know, right now or just generally?
Right
like,
now.
Like in history?
Right now.
Wow. I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, I think finally of a lot of them. Though the person I get excited to see when I'm going to the debates, and as you know, I'm debating next week, you know, I really enjoy hanging out with Joe Biden. He met my wife last week. He was incredibly gracious.
Favorite Republican?
You know, the first person that came to mind, unfortunately, is the late, great John McCain.
Yeah. Debates next week. You've been prepping for that all day.
Yeah.
What's your strategy?
Well, the fun thing is we're heading to Atlanta, which was where Martin Luther King did most of his work. And my flagship proposal, the Freedom Dividend, is actually something that Martin Luther King himself championed in the 1960s. He called it the guaranteed minimum income. He said the simplest solution for poverty is to abolish it directly through a guaranteed minimum income. So I hope that being in Atlanta helps get this message out to the American people.
And last question, you're a basketball player. I've talked to Bernie Sanders about his game. I'm a basketball player as well.
Oh, good.
What's your game look like?
Well, my game is aging, aging a bit. So it used to consist of my trying to take people off the dribble and get to the hole. But now it's a combination of things that often ends in a fadeaway jump shot.
I love that. That's what LeBron's doing a lot of these days.
Oh, you know, I mean, heck, you can't stay young forever. Father Time, undefeated.
Well, we've got a basketball hoop in our studio. So at
really?
Some point, we hope you'll come join us in the studio
and
showcase
that.
Your stuff.
Yeah, we'll
Andrew
love that,
Yang,
Alex.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Our thanks to Andrew Yang. Hopefully, we're going to get to play some basketball with him soon. Now to Tulsi Gabbard, who came and visited us on Veterans Day this week. Of course, she is a veteran. We thank her for her service. She talked about a whole lot of things, impeachment and this big fight that she's in with Hillary Clinton. It was the first time she talked about this letter her lawyer sent essentially threatening to potentially sue Hillary Clinton. So here's Tulsi Gabbard.
Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
You're so good,
yeah.
Alex.
We appreciate you being here. Welcome back
Thank
to
you.
The Issue Is.
It's always
of course,
good to see
the Democratic
you.
Candidate for president. And also in your role as congressmember, somebody
yes.
who will vote potentially on articles of impeachment. The big story of this week, we finally have these impeachment hearings publicly. From the evidence that you've seen so far, are you ready to vote to impeach?
No. I think that the public hearings, the information that is being gathered, the testimony that's being delivered before Congress is important, both for members of Congress to be able to have access to, which will really be the first time, you know, for those of us who don't sit on those subject matter committees, to be able to get that information and really for the American people to make their own assessment of what occurred and what should happen next.
I mean, do you think that the president committed high crimes and misdemeanors?
Look, I think that we've got to see this process work itself through. You know, there's a reason why I've supported having an inquiry. I have some concerns given some of the information that was released after the whistleblower complaint came out and so on. Transparency, focus, and a nonpartisan approach to gathering the facts is essential for us, the American people, to get to the truth.
Another big story this week is what's happening between you and Hillary Clinton, right? So Hillary Clinton did this podcast where she suggested, without saying your name, that you were potentially an agent of Russia and that Russia was prepping you to be a third-party run. A lawyer has put out a letter to her saying that that's defamatory. Why is it defamatory?
I mean, give me a break. I am a patriot. I'm a soldier. Serving in the United States Army National Guard. I've served now for over 16 years. I've deployed twice to the Middle East. I serve as a member of Congress now for 7 years on the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Armed Services Committee, the Homeland Security Committees, participating in high-level intelligence briefings, holding oversight hearings, questioning the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, working with high-level military leaders. I think really the issue here is that this is not just a personal spat between two people. What this is a very serious difference in our foreign policy. Hillary Clinton and her legacy of foreign policy has been a very interventionist one of promoting and championing regime change wars in different parts of the world. Wars that have taken the lives of thousands of my brothers and sisters in uniform. I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I'm running for president to serve as commander-in-chief, to bring about a change, to end this policy of being the world's police, and actually focus on making sure we have a secure country and bringing our resources back towards serving the people here at home.
But your lawyer says that this is defamatory, asking for a retraction of what she said.
Yes.
If she does not issue a retraction, are you going to sue Hillary Clinton?
I'm going to let the lawyers try to figure out that. But I think the point that I'm raising here is that if Hillary Clinton and her proxies can do this to me, They can do this to anyone who stands up with a dissenting voice, speaking out for peace, speaking out for an end to these interventionist regime change war policies. This is really the big issue that we're facing.
Her point is that she thinks that they're grooming you to run as a third-party candidate. Is there any scenario whatsoever where you would run as a third-party candidate?
No. I've said that over and over for months and months and months. And I think the fact that she, again, and people around her, people in the media, political opponents, they keep bringing this thing up, even though I have said countless times, I will not run as a third-party candidate. I'm running for the Democratic nomination. They're just trying to stoke suspicion and fear in people's minds so that they won't support me, once again, just trying to undermine my candidacy.
Foreign policy, something you just brought up,
yes.
a big thing, a big differentiator between you and a lot of the other candidates. On the issue of Russia, what should the U.S. policy towards Russia be?
The number one thing that we've got to do is to de-escalate tensions between the United States and nuclear-armed countries like Russia and China. Nuclear strategists are sounding the alarm bells because of this new Cold War that we are in. Tensions are increasing. Nuclear arms race is ensuing. It is pushing us closer and closer to the brink of nuclear catastrophe, more so than ever before, certainly in our lifetimes. This is a very serious existential threat that exists for every single American. We've got to be able to exercise all the tools of diplomacy to be able to work out our differences with countries like Russia and China, while also pursuing areas of shared and common interest, like setting a goal of reducing the proliferation of these nuclear weapons in the world, addressing climate change, and so many others.
Another area of disagreement is over the issue of Syria and what to do forward there. There have been some that have criticized your meeting with Bashar al-Assad. You've talked about that a lot, saying that you're on a fact-finding mission there. In terms of the policy of Syria going forward, what do you say to critics who are worried about, if you do pull out the troops, that there's going to be a power vacuum and that bad guys are essentially going to fill it?
I would say that those people don't know very much about our foreign policy. The fact is, we have been waging a regime change effort and war in Syria since 2011 using two primary war tactics. Number one, providing aid and arms and equipment and funding to proxy fighters on the ground who are actually terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and their affiliates and offshoots. They're the most powerful force fighting to overthrow the government. If they had been successful in overthrowing the government, they would be the ones who would be taking over that country, posing a much more serious threat to the United States. The second tactic has been kind of a modern-day siege of draconian sanctions that have hit the most vulnerable people in Syria the hardest. As president now, I would end this regime change effort and make it so that the Syrian people can determine their own future.
So what exactly does that look like? Does that mean all troops are out of Syria?
That means that if our troops are not engaging in an effort to defeat ISIS and Al-Qaeda, then bring them home.
And that's true in Afghanistan, that's true everywhere, right?
Yes, because if you look at the tactic that's been used, right? We've had these long-term occupations, these regime change wars, this ongoing nation building that's followed. It's cost us as American taxpayers over $6 trillion. We have lost thousands of American soldier service members and their lives in this. And what's the result we've seen? We have seen Al-Qaeda is stronger now than they were when they attacked us on 9/11, the resurgence of ISIS and this growing terrorist threat. So these wars have not actually made us more safe. I would bring our troops back home, keep a close eye on the terrorist threat coming from jihadist groups like Al-Qaeda, use our special forces to get in, defeat that threat, and get out.
And for people that would be worried that, like, blood would be on your hands of people that may get massacred in the meantime.
Look, the blood of our servicemen and women and the countless people in these countries where we have waged these wars is on the hands who have been proponents of these wars, people like Hillary Clinton and others.
You bring a unique perspective. You and Mayor Pete, the only veterans in the Democratic campaign. President Trump, obviously not a veteran as well. How is actually being a veteran, how has that shaped your view? How do you think you view things differently because of that experience?
Well, I've been serving now for over 16 years. I started out, enlisted as a private, was enlisted for 4 years, went to basic training in South Carolina. My first deployment to Iraq was as a specialist. Then went on to OCS and deployed a second time as a platoon leader. But throughout all this time, just being able to serve alongside so many great patriots, understanding really what it means for those few to raise their hands and say, I am willing to lay my life down for our country, and seeing how they are the ones who pay the price for the decisions that are made in Washington.
This week there was this big event at the Coliseum, which yes. which you spoke at, honoring veterans there for the first time on Veterans Day. What do you want people to know about veterans that maybe they don't know about veterans, having actually been one?
That it's easy sometimes for politicians especially to give flowery speeches on Veterans Day saying thank you for your service, but that words can be cheap, you know? Actions really speak louder than words, and unfortunately right now too many of our veterans who are being sent off to fight in these wars in service to our country, unfortunately oftentimes unnecessary wars, when they come home, they're being left behind.
Right, and that leads us to our next issue, which is homelessness.
Yes.
And we've seen so many homeless here in the state of California, and many of them are veterans. It's been an almost intractable problem for us here. If you're president, how can you use the federal government specifically to help the homeless issue?
I mean, look, two things immediately come to mind. Number one is making sure that we have the resources necessary to make sure that every single veteran in this country can have a roof over their heads. There are amazing people who are out there working on the ground every day who's saying, hey, look, there's not enough of these HUD-VASH vouchers that can help a veteran who can't afford a place on their own to be able to make that happen. Number two is making sure that those who are working within our government aren't just sitting behind a desk waiting for someone to come knock at the door, but actually helping deploy these resources through outreach teams and going and finding veterans where they are, with the whole toolkit of resources, whether they need housing, whether you need some mental health treatment, whether you need treatment related to substance abuse. There are so many different factors that we need to consider. The bottom line is get the help to our veterans who have served and sacrificed so much.
Perhaps the biggest debate on the debate stage in the Democratic Party has been over the issue of health care.
Yes.
You're a fan of Medicare for All, right?
I've got a plan called Single Payer Plus.
Okay.
And it basically, it's modeled loosely after the healthcare system in Australia, where you have every single American who is enrolled in, it's a Medicare for All type of program. Everyone gets that basic quality health care. However, if you want to buy supplemental private insurance, or if your employer is offering you a great plan, you want to keep that, that's fine. But that does not undermine or take away from every American being able to get the quality health care they need.
So it sounds like everybody is opted in automatically and you can opt out? Is that sort of what it is?
You don't have to opt out. Everybody is enrolled in this program. If you want to supplement it or add on to it or whatever, you have the freedom to do so.
So passing that would be tough, right? You've got insurance companies that have hundreds of millions of dollars they could throw at lobbying. Even when the Democratic Party had a supermajority in the Obama administration, they couldn't pass a single payer plan. Mm-hmm. How are you actually going to pass that?
As I travel across the country in rural towns in Iowa, even some towns that voted for Donald Trump predominantly, big cities, all different parts of the country, healthcare is the number one issue on people's mm-hmm. minds. And the challenges people are facing don't discriminate between Republicans and Democrats. I hear from people who have children who have diabetes and who cannot afford the insulin that they need to make sure that their child is healthy. The stories are numerous and they are heartrending.
No doubt about that.
And they recognize that the current system is corrupt and broken because it is a for-profit system. So while Washington politicians may be paid off by the big insurance and big pharma lobbyists, we're organizing people to call up to their leaders and say, hey, you need to put our interests first, not allow big insurance and big pharma in the room as we are writing this legislation that will actually ensure quality health care for every American.
So the phone calls, that's basically, do you think that's going to be enough to overcome that?
Oh, no, there's a lot more than phone calls.
Yeah.
Look, people are crying out for help.
Right.
People are literally crying out for help because their lives or the lives of their loved ones depend on it. And they are being deprived of the care they need in the wealthiest nation in the world because of this greedy for-profit system that we have in place. That's why we've got to change this system at its core while also addressing The revolving door and the legal corruption that exists in Washington.
Yeah, and there's no issue more personal to people. So
exactly.
You're here in California.
Yes.
We love having you in California.
It's great
you get to
be
surf
here
in California,
I
which
know.
Is great. We got the California primary earlier than ever, more
yes.
important than ever. Pretty complicated state with 9 media markets, the most populous state in the country.
Yeah.
Polling shows you know, doing so-so right now. How do you improve that? How do you win in California?
Continuing to reach out to voters all across the state. Obviously, you have LA and San Francisco, but there are so many different communities, so many different people who are looking for a serious change in our leadership, not just to defeat Donald Trump, but to bring about the kind of unifying leadership that will help us bridge the divides, heal the divisive wounds in our country. So I'm using every platform possible, coming on shows like yours, getting out, we're holding town hall meetings and really going directly to voters so that they can hear my message and I can ask for their support.
Of course, nothing more important than coming on this show. So we appreciate you got that
of course.
Right. And part of coming on this show is we like to have some fun. So we like to play some games. This is called the name game.
Okay.
You hear a little Beyonce there.
All right.
Okay. So this is one word that comes to mind when you hear these names, okay? Hopefully we don't get you in trouble. President Donald Trump.
Orange.
Vice President Mike Pence.
Indiana.
President Barack Obama.
Hawaii, come on.
All right. Vice President Joe Biden.
Bo Biden. I was friends with his son.
Okay. Hillary Clinton.
Warmonger.
Kamala Harris.
Criminal justice.
And finally, Bernie Sanders.
Lovable and grumpy.
Of course, you endorsed Bernie Sanders back in 2016 and was one of his most vocal supporters at the time. All right, another game called
All right.
Personal Issues. This is where we get to know you a little bit better
All
as
right.
a person. First question, favorite way to relax?
Surfing, no question about that.
Favorite TV show?
That's a good question. I don't watch much TV anymore.
Okay, we'll keep moving. Favorite
All right.
sports team?
Tennessee Titans.
Favorite Disney movie?
Moana. I think that's a Disney movie.
Yes, it is. Favorite book?
Band of Brothers.
Favorite meal?
Mom's Cooking.
Me too.
Whatever it is.
Favorite conservative?
Good friend of mine is Trey Gowdy.
Yes, the former congressman from South Carolina.
That's right.
Who led the Benghazi hearings. You and him, probably very close with Hillary together.
We disagree on a whole lot of things.
Favorite people.
We disagree on a whole lot of things, but we are good friends.
You also did a workout while you were here
yes.
In Southern California this week, a CrossFit workout on the sand.
Yeah.
How does sort of working out keep you sane?
It's a great just way to, get my energy out and... what we did here especially was really special because it was in honor of Veterans Day, put out an all call. A whole bunch of people came out to work out in honor of our veterans. We had some Navy SEALs who helped run the workout, and it was challenging.
Yeah.
It was good.
It looks tough, but you got to be the most fit candidate that we have.
You know, I really believe in health and making sure we take care of our bodies. It's both physical, mental, and spiritual well-being are important.
I certainly agree with you on that.
Our thanks to Andrew Yang and to Tulsi Gabbard and to you for listening to the Issue Is podcast. We really appreciate it. Next week, there's a big debate again. MSNBC is hosting in Atlanta, so we're going to be talking about that on the show. And a whole lot more. We're excited about the next few weeks on The Issue Is, and we hope that you'll tell people about this show. Subscribe to the podcast, like it, give us a review, and feel free to send me a note via the social media at Alex Michelson, alexmichelson@gmail.com. Really interested to hear your perspective. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.